All right, so this is a great segue from what Emily presented to talk specifically about the effect of in-hospital formula supplementation on breastfeeding duration exclusivity. And I don't have anything to disclose. These results are based on secondary data analysis funded by an NICHD grant. Well, we all know that one of the 10 steps, step 6, specifically addresses indiscriminate use of formula in the hospital and other foods and drinks. And here in the U.S., this step got an extra boost when the Joint Commission adopted, as in the revision of the perinatal core measure, documentation of exclusive breast milk feeding during the infant's newborn stay in the hospital. But I, my colleagues, I'm in neonatology, and our neonatologists provide normal newborn care in all the area hospitals around Cincinnati. And because of the Joint Commission measure, I decided to make that our theme for last year to talk about. And actually, we were very lucky to have both Roger Edwards and Miriam Labatt come and speak with our group, and it's really stimulated a lot of dialogue about the use of formula supplement in the hospital. And one of the reoccurring themes of just what you're saying, there's a lot of anxiety among the physicians about not just in case bottle. Many of them would say to me, well, where's the evidence? What difference could one bottle make? Just one bottle before they leave. The baby's weight's a little bit marginal. And so that really motivated me to take a look at our data because I actually have, I'm going backwards. I'm left-handed, so I always do these things backwards. I realized I have two different data sets, cohorts, research study that did UC Davis that I could look at this. Because there really aren't a lot of published studies that specifically look at step six and the impact of step six. And we know we can't just look at, you know, in isolation. But there are some data from the National Infant Feeding Practices Survey where they did find that infants who received formula in the hospital were about 3 times more likely to no longer be breastfed at 6 weeks postpartum compared to infants who didn't receive formula in the hospital. But these data are based on maternal recall at 2 months postpartum, and it included both mothers who had an intention to both exclusively breastfeed and mixed feeding. And I realized that in both of these cohorts that we have, we are able to only zero in on those moms who intended to exclusively breastfeed, because this was in both, upon admission, they were asked, how do you intend to feed your baby, breast, both, unsure, only breast milk, only formula. And also, all these mothers were given a scale that we developed, the infant feeding intention scale, that gives you a quantitative measure of a mother's strength of intensity into her commitment to exclusively breastfeed throughout the first 6 months. And so we could adjust for those psychosocial confounders that, you know, are often used as an excuse to not believe the data on the effect of in-hospital formula supplementation. So we felt like we, you know, had two data sets where we could really provide a solid case, you know, look at it in a solid way. And also in both of these data sets, formula use was recorded prospectively. So mothers in both of these hospital settings, newborn nursery flow sheets included documentation of breastfeeds and formula feeds. We also asked the mother whether we saw formula in the flow sheet or mother's report. We included it. And sadly, sometimes we'd see formula in the flow sheet that the mother didn't know about. And also we'd see, you know, mothers would give formula that the hospital staff didn't know about. But if either one showed up, we included it. So we were really trying to be as comprehensive as possible. All right, so the first cohort, these moms were recruited to evaluate a doula care program. And if you're curious about the doula care program, that's published in Joggin in 2009. This is actually part of my PhD thesis in epidemiology. But in this cohort, all these were low-income, first-time mothers, but they were delivering at a private nonprofit hospital where the majority of women did have private health insurance. These women were in the minority at this hospital. All of these moms, so when a mom was admitted into labor and she was expecting term delivery, low-risk delivery, on public health insurance, she was invited to be part of this evaluation study. If we happen to have a doula on call, she received doula care. Otherwise, she received standard care. But all of those eligible for doula care were followed up. Oh, I'm sorry. I keep going the wrong way. Oh, I just back up that in this setting, IBCLC support, this was not a baby-friendly hospital. Newborn nurseries were used quite a lot. In fact, the pediatricians in this group insisted upon it in the morning for morning rounds so they wouldn't have to bother answering the mother's questions. They could just go in and evaluate the babies. And IBCLC support was only when paged. Most of the IBCLC effort was in the NICU. So this is just a schema to show you who was part of this data analysis set. Now, I think I forgot to mention that for this data analysis, we excluded mothers who didn't have an intention to exclusively breastfeed. So in this doula care cohort, our first interview with them was within 24 hours of admission to the hospital of birth. And if they indicated no desire, that they wanted to do both from the beginning, although we know that we would, of course, want to encourage them to exclusively breastfeed, but just for the purpose of the analysis, we only took those who had intention to exclusively breastfeed. And so we lost 36 for this analysis. So we have 35 women received doula care, 89 standard care. And we interviewed these moms, like I say, within the first 24 hours between day 3 and 4, and then follow-up phone calls to look at breastfeeding duration and exclusivity at 6 weeks and 6 months. So like I said, these are first-time low-income moms delivering a term infant. They're young moms, very multi-ethnic cohort, very much reflecting our Northern California setting. And keep in mind, we excluded all those without exclusive breastfeeding intention. So the intention to exclusively breastfeed actually was quite high, and this does reflect attitudes in Northern California. We find this really common for moms have heard the message, WIC is great in Northern California, about promoting breastfeeding. And over half our moms said, yes, I want to give my baby nothing but breast milk for the first 6 months. How many of you in here are familiar with survival analysis and professional hazards? Okay, so not everybody, so try and speak more broadly. So my approach to looking at the effect of in-hospital formula supplementation was using survival analysis. This just simply means, does the risk factor, our risk factor here is in-hospital formula, decrease the likelihood of surviving exclusive breastfeeding? And so our exposure of interest is in-hospital formula use. And yes, just like Emily was saying, you know, what's the gap between your mother's intention and what happened? So even though 100% of these mothers intended to exclusively breastfeed, and as Miriam likes to say, 100% of the babies, that was their intention, 49% of these infants received formula supplement in the hospital, 49%. And I've actually found that number to be pretty common. In my first cohort in Cincinnati, very similar numbers. And that's what, you're exactly right, that's what convinced them to form a working group and make changes. And they've made amazing changes just based on us doing a little bit of data collection and feedback. So what are the covariates we control for? So, you know, confounding is when, okay, we see there's a relationship between in-hospital formula supplementation and shorter breastfeeding duration, but that's just because the women who supplement, they're less educated, they're less motivated to breastfeed, they have these other issues that, and it's just because of confounding. But in this study, we were able to control for other factors that may explain an observed relationship. So, of course, we control for doula care. Maternal obesity has been associated with shorter breastfeeding duration. Cesarean delivery, our infant feeding attention scale, a quantitative measure of how committed they were to breastfeeding, and then the usual, maternal age, ethnicity, education, length of stay. Interestingly, in this study, it was older mothers who were more likely to supplement, and that probably is because they were more likely to have cesarean delivery, and a lot of the supplementation was around cesarean delivery in this setting. All right, so drum roll, please, our first set of results. So I'm combining two studies. I'm kind of just giving you one quick snapshot here. All right, so this is a little hard to digest at first, but hang with me here. Let's see, is there a pointer? Oh, good. All right, so our outcome of interest is right here. This is showing for every time that infant received a feeding of formula in the hospital, the hazard of no longer exclusively breastfeeding at any point in time as compared to babies who didn't receive any formula increases by 15%. That means that this is for every single bottle used. So how often do you hear from physicians, oh, just top off the breastfeeding with formula if you're unsure afterwards? So an infant who received four feedings during their two-day stay, that's a 45% increase in hazard of no longer being exclusively breastfed. And what's also interesting is that even after we adjusted for all those other potential confounders, it didn't really change. It didn't change the hazard at all. It still was around 15% for each bottle of formula. So, Maya Bunick came to our group and she talked of this, that the worst advice a physician could give is to top up. You know, they absolutely feel this baby needs a bottle. There's no way they're going to let this baby out without it. Then, okay, you know, one bottle at the end of the day or whatever, but there's, and our data support her that there's this cumulative effect. The more bottles, the worse it is. And just because I'm sure you guys are all curious, we did find that without a doula, the hazard of no longer exclusively breastfeeding almost doubled. So 94%, 100% would be twice as much. And also with as maternal obese BMI increased. So a 5-unit increase in BMI is like going from being normal weight to overweight or overweight to obese. All right, so this is just the survival analysis, survival curve. So the blue are the mothers whose babies received no formula in the hospital. And this is showing the proportion that were still exclusively breastfeeding over time. The red are the mothers whose babies received in-hospital formula supplementation. And I do need to clarify that we didn't count it when we calculated duration of exclusive breastfeeding. If they received some formula in the hospital, but the mother got, at some point, got back to exclusive breastfeeding, you know, we counted their duration from that point forward. So we, you know, we didn't, obviously, by definition, we can't exclude moms who gave formula in the hospital for this analysis. Otherwise, they'd all be excluded. So we have a very liberal definition, actually, of exclusive breastfeeding. We also didn't count it against them. They gave an occasional bottle. If they gave a bottle more than once a week, they no longer were counted as exclusive breastfeeding. But what you could see from this is that for over half the mothers, once they started formula supplementation in the hospital, that was a slippery slope they could never overcome. You're just starting them on a downward spiral. And, you know, the median duration of exclusive breastfeeding was 3 days in those that received in-hospital formula supplementation versus 35 days, 10 times longer if the baby received no formula in the hospital. All right, so let's move on to the next cohort. Let's see how I'm doing on time. 7 minutes, all right. So these data are from our early lactation success study, and I've listed here, we've published several papers on this study. In fact, 2 years ago, I presented here on delayed onset of lactogenesis in this cohort. And these are also first-time mothers, but these mothers delivered at an academic medical center, UC Davis Medical Center. And at the UC Davis Medical Center, about half our mothers are low-income, about half are funded through private insurance. And we enrolled these moms during pregnancy. They could speak either English or Spanish, so similar to the other cohort in that respect. And this was based on a catchment area. If they lived in a zip code that was within 8 miles of the medical center, we screened them for enrollment. And this is over a two-year period. We screened a whole bunch of moms. And just to, for the sake of getting to the heart of the matter, this analysis is based on the 407 mothers who delivered at term whose infants were not in special care nursery more than 24 hours, who had intention to exclusively breastfeeding during the prenatal interview. And sadly, I will say that very few mothers with intention to do both did go on to exclusively breastfeed, those with intention to supplement. So this is an issue that really needs to be addressed prenatally. I think it's hard to turn things around if you start at day zero postpartum. So 407 moms a little bit older on average than the other group, a little bit more higher level of education, but still very diverse in ethnicity. See, about half had private, half public insurance, 69% vaginal delivery. Okay, for these moms, we followed them up only to day 60. So, you know, survival analysis works great when you have a nice long follow-up period. But since we only followed them up to day 60, we used logistic regression, because this allows us to look at what are the odds or what are the risks of there being a certain outcome. Our outcome in this case was stop breastfeeding at day 60. So this is very similar to the new infant feeding practices survey approach. So, you know, what's the risk of no longer breastfeeding at day 60 if the infant received formula in the hospital versus not? And even though a whole different hospital, different cohort, this hospital, there were a lot of attempts to, not a baby-friendly hospital, but a newborn nursery ran by Dr. Caroline Chantry, very committed to exclusive breastfeeding, and we still had, we were shocked at the high rate of in-hospital formula use. And no nursery. This is a hospital without a newborn nursery. We call it the virtual nursery because all babies remain with moms, and still we were very disappointed in our rate of in-hospital formula use. So, and looking at the effect of in-hospital formula supplementation on risk of weaning, we adjusted for all those same covariates: mother's age, ethnicity, BMI, and strength of intention to exclusively breastfeed. And again, these are only mothers who said, I want to exclusively breastfeed. And so, drum roll please, here's our results. Now, if you recall the slide I showed at the very beginning for the infant feeding practices survey, this one is remarkably similar. We're seeing that the risk of no longer breastfeeding at day 60 is over three times greater if the infant received formula in the hospital as compared to if not receiving formula. Only 9% of the babies were weaned at day 60 if they received no formula in the hospital. But among babies whose mothers said, I want to exclusively breastfeed, 32%, a third, were weaned at day 60 if they received formula. Now, this slide I think is quite fascinating. In this group, I actually, my research assistant was able to take all the open-ended text information, the open-ended responses mothers gave us when we interviewed them in that first 24 hours postpartum and again at day 3 and 4 on their breastfeeding experience, including why they perceived their baby got infant formula in the hospital. And those reasons fell under these themes. And the themes that most put that infant at risk of being weaned had to do with tangible difficulties with breastfeeding. So difficulty latching, really this really means difficulty with baby feeding at the breast. If this was the reason for giving formula, the risk of weaning was 5.5 times greater than those who received no formula. So this group in particular versus no formula. If the mother was experiencing breast or nipple pain, again, a really high risk of weaning. And if the mother gave formula for psychosocial reasons, and you know, common psychosocial reasons were, I'm not comfortable breastfeeding in front of everybody here visiting, I'm exhausted, I'm overwhelmed by this. Now, a lot of times, all three of those went together. The mother who's having pain and maybe not latching is the same mom that's saying, I'm exhausted and overwhelmed, I can't do this anymore. Okay, thank you. And so in summary, in both of these cohorts, we found that in-hospital formula use is associated with shorter duration of exclusive or any breastfeeding. And this is true even though we restricted our analysis to mothers who said they wanted to exclusively breastfeed and after adjustment for how strong their intentions were to exclusively breastfeed. But the results from the last slide I showed you here, where we saw the risk of weaning was highest in those who were having real problems, you know, I think it does cause us, we need to ask, is it in the hospital formula itself causing shorter breastfeeding duration? If we just removed all the formula from the hospital, I think we would improve the situation. But are we fixing the red flag, the symptom of the problem, or we still need to address the underlying issue that mothers need support both in the hospital and outside of the hospital. If we just remove formula and don't help that mom with getting that baby latched properly, getting her comfortable, her psychosocial issues, and follow-up for those things, and that's why I think, as has been shown, that the more baby-friendly steps we have, the better. That this alone isn't going to be the answer. Thank you.